Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and on the line we have Yukon Quest champion Hugh Neff. And make sure you check out his brand new website, hughneff.com. Hugh, how's it going?
Good morning, Robert. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. How is the weather up in Tok?
It's a lovely morning here. I'm staring out the window at lovely gray, cloudy skies, probably about 50 degrees, been raining. Got the heater on, put it that way.
Yeah, it's a cool one down here in Willow as well. So you've been back from your school tour for about a week and a half, 2 weeks now. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that go this year?
It went awesome. You'd love the scene I'm checking out now, right now, Robert. I'm out, you know, the room here where the TV is, and I'm out staring at the window, and I put the dogs in the other pen because they were starting to dig in the dirt, you know, and getting out of the pen we had them behind the house. So I've got them in the pen, you know, next to the cabin, and they're all on top of each other, playing with each other, and their mother princess is looking over at me like, get me out of here. Typical mother, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Need a break. But, yeah,
exactly.
the tour went great. Had tons of fun. Got this, you know, the tour is not only a chance for me to, you know, spread the word about mushing and about living one's dreams with all the kids and teachers around the country, but chance to visit with friends that I grew up with. You know, some of my best friends, you know, from Boy Scouts, and as well as my family, my sisters and nephews and aunts and cousins. So it was a long month, but it's always a great reminder of why I came up to Alaska, because I get down there, man, and, you know, I respect America and I love all that she stands for, but I'm not really good with the whole humidity deal and living your life in air conditioning. So, a few hours of that sweat dripping all off my skin, and I'm ready to get back north.
tell us one highlight of the tour, not only with the kids, but also something that you guys did when you were down there. How about sharing a couple of quick stories about that?
Oh, you know, almost every school, there's these kids that you see, and first of all, I try to relate to them, you know, that we're all humans. I mean, I always tell people that I'm not much of a big proponent. I mean, I sign autographs and all that, but I don't really believe in them, to tell you the truth. I don't think any human's that much greater than another human. So I just try to teach these kids, you know, I'm just like any of you, and a lot of you are a lot smarter than me, and I'm just a guy with a dream that's, you know, persevering and plugging through life. You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and, you know, trying to evolve, and that's all we can really hope for. But some of these kids come up to me with, you know, they've either written a nice letter or made a nice picture book or, you know, stuff like that, and it really really tears your heart apart to see how much they're pulling for you, and it means a lot. As far as, you know, other amazing stories, I had fun hanging out with, you know, my buddy Ken Huff, who used to play for the Redskins. He was one of the Hogs. What we do a lot, Nicole and I were doing when we're not actually giving the speeches, is we're out in the woods, man. As much as I'm a dog musher, I'm a worshiper of nature. I love, you know, I often see the great Almighty's works just through getting out on the trails and walking around. You know, my heroes weren't, you know, necessarily dog mushers. They were John Muir and John Burroughs and Emerson and Thoreau and all the guys who were out there inspecting wildlife back in the day. So one amazing night we went for a hike in the Shenandoah Valley just north of Lexington, Virginia. And it was getting a little dark, and we were walking down a waterfall and doing a 3-mile loop, so we had thought. And I, you know me, Robert, I've seen some bizarre things in this life, and this ranks up there with any of them. So it's getting dark out, and all of a sudden, we realize we're on the wrong trail. Instead of taking a 3-mile loop, we're doing like a 10-mile loop. So, no big deal, you know. The only problem is I didn't happen to have like a flashlight or a headlamp or anything, but it was a nice trail, and I wasn't too worried about getting lost. Anyhow, all of a sudden comes crashing out of the bush, what I think to be, you know, Lord knows what, some type of varmint, and it's like a college girl out going for a hike, and she must have been on spring break or something, and I look at Nicole, and we're both sort of startled, and I said something to the effect of, out playing with the wolves I see, and she just looks at me with a smile on her face, and the girl goes, well, you know, and she just keeps on walking along. But the funniest part about it was, you know, being the ham that I am, Robert, you know what hat I was wearing. So this girl is out in the middle of the woods, and she runs into me in the middle of the dark, you know, where you can barely see anything, and I've got my Cat in the Hat hat on. So
of
I can only
course.
Imagine the look on her face as she sort of kept on walking, going, who are these people? But it was amazing, amazing time down there. You know, you're always a little bit more worried, I'd say, about running into not necessarily, you know, bears or stuff like what we have to worry with up here, but more the smaller stuff like ticks and skunks and stuff like that down there. That same walk, another half hour later, we actually walked right by a deer that was less than, I'd say, 30 feet away from us, and it sort of looked up at us and then just looked down at the ground and kept on browsing and eating, and it was pretty amazing how, you know, it wasn't afraid. It could almost feel our energy, and it knew that we were hunting it or what have you, but that was a pretty amazing sight, and I love getting out and seeing all the parks in the U.S., and, you know, there's a lot of beauty to behold down there, and I'm always telling these kids, especially the ones that are lucky enough to grow up in the country, to, you know, get out there and explore all that you have around you. I mean, they don't really need TV or video games. They've got, you know, a lot of fun to do right outside the back door if they're willing to make that journey.
Exactly. So I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad I was able to help out watching over.
Oh, you were amazing, dude. Thanks again, man. You were great.
Hey, no problem. And I hear that you ventured a little bit south this time. You headed down to South Carolina. That's a new part for the school tour, isn't it?
Well, I didn't make it to the closest I made it to is Charlotte, which is right on the border. I met a lot of people from South Carolina that came to the talk we did right near the Duke Mansion in Charlotte. And I definitely have a lot of interest from folks in South Carolina, but once again, I wasn't able to actually make it into South Carolina. I spent a good week in North Carolina, and definitely, you know, my cousin Bob lives there in Mooresville, which is where a lot of the NASCAR folk live. But I love that whole Asheville area up in the hills there, and just really great people, very dignified, it's nice how everyone treats each other down there with a lot of respect, and they're very cordial. It's very old-fashioned, like the way they, you know, you don't walk by, you know, I get sort of bummed out when I'm in cities, you know, and yeah, I try to smile at somebody as you're walking down the sidewalk, and they just have a grim look on their face, and you just want to say to these folks, you know what, your life is a treasure, brighten up a little bit, and we all go through tough times, and, you know, sometimes work can be depressing, or you're having issues with whatever's going on in your world, but you gotta stay positive. That's one thing I've learned, obviously, throughout the years.
So, if I'm not correct, you're not doing a school tour this fall. You're going to be over in Germany. Is that correct?
I'm working on that with my buddy Suey. Folks in the U.S. all know about the Iditarod, but they don't really realize the quest is huge internationally. Germany, Japan, Norwegians, Australians, a lot of folks follow the quest, and I think it behooves the quest and possibly the Iditarod as well to get out there and promote the sport as much as possible. And Germans, obviously, William, Sebastian, Hans, Jerry, and, you know, other Sylvia, there's been a lot of Germans or Austrians that have been tied up with the quest, and it's something the quest in this day and age, it might help the quest to get a better connection with the folks over in Europe. But that being said, I'm definitely probably going to actually be doing another tour as well. I've been talking to some friends in the Rapid City area that I had met with last year, and then I had a contact from Toronto recently. So we'll have to see how it goes. I know Lance has done a lot of traveling in the past trying to promote the sport, and obviously a lot of other mushers have as well. And it's a lot of wear and tear, you know, all the traveling back and forth. And it's not like you're actually making, you know, tons of money doing this. You're doing it as much for the experience and as a way to, you know, help others sort of get a better view of what our lives are really all about up here.
So I know you're heading to Australia in July, but before that, what's going on? You mentioned off air about something that the Yukon Quest is doing.
Yeah, it's awesome. The Quest, you know, anybody who's involved with the Quest loves the Quest to the core. We all have had our numerous arguments and issues with the Quest. That's just the way it is. It's the theater of a race, but it's a beautiful race, and they're, you know, always looking to survive and evolve, and a way to, for any of us to help support the races, to get involved with some of the events they do, you know, when the race isn't happening. And a couple of weeks they're going to be having a canoe race. It's just $100 to get in, and it's a great event. It's going to be right in Fairbanks, I believe in two weekends, I think 23rd or 24th. You have to contact them to get the exact date, but it's the Doggone Canoe Race, and I will be there, and Walter will be my navigator, and
very
hopefully
cool.
He doesn't tip us.
Very cool. So how far is the race, do you know?
It's just a fun race. It's not like a big deal. It's only a few miles, I think like 10 maybe, and
okay.
It's going to the Botel Bar, I believe, and it's a poker run is what they call it, and it's just, you know, like I said, it's a way for everybody to get together in the off season, see how everybody's doing, and just a way to support the race. And just like Mushers, you know, these race organizations, whether it's the Quest, Iditarod, or any of the smaller races, are always looking, you know, they're nickel and diming it, trying to raise money for the event. So it's just a way to help support the race.
And then a couple of weeks following that, you're going to be heading to Australia. I think that's a pretty big trip for you. I don't think you've been down that way, have you?
Yeah. I'm going to be flying out on the 3rd, and it's going to be quite the event. It's, you know, I got to put it this way. I have a layover in Hawaii so they can refuel the plane. Unfortunately, it's only for a couple hours, so I don't think I can even get off the plane. But it's one of those deals. My Aunt Kathy went there a few years back, and she just couldn't stop talking about how amazing a place it is. So really looking forward to it. It's the national championships down there. I'll be staying with the McIntyre family, and it's just a way to, you know, like I said before, learn from them about how they run dogs down there, as much as share some stories of what it's like to do the Quest and Iditarod. And from what I heard, they do actually have snow in parts of Australia, but dogs aren't allowed to run in some of these state or national areas, the parks, so they do a, more of a dry land event with carts, which can be just as wild and just as much fun. So I'm hopefully they'll let me try out a team or two when I'm down there.
Very cool. Yeah, that kart racing is something else entirely, especially if it's a sprint thing. It's very similar to almost kind of like horse racing a little bit. So it's pretty cool to check out if you've never checked that out. And hopefully you'll get some pictures, possibly some video to post on Facebook and your website as well. So that's going to be in the beginning of July. How long are you down in Australia?
I think 10 days, but it'd be nice if we could somehow, I don't know what the satellite delay is going to be like, but maybe I could record a show with you or something from there. That'd be sort of neat. But I've looked at pictures down there, and they've got some nice looking, you know, good husky style dogs. They look like they have some great speed to them. One of my mentors, Lester Earhart from Tanana, was always telling me that I should try to get a dingo, which, you know, is sort of Australia's version of wolves, and bring a dingo back, because he said it's like the fastest four-legged, you know, canine on earth. So I don't think I'll be able to do that for Lester, but I wouldn't mind actually getting to see a dingo in action. Just their speed is supposed to be amazing.
So speaking of the four-leggeds, I know we want to focus on the pups in this show of Gypsy Musher. And again, I want to promote your new website a little bit. That's huneff.com. When you're searching Google and things, make sure you check out that new website, huneff.com. It's going to be the official website for Hugh and his team. So what's
up? Yeah, I appreciate you putting that together. It's a work in progress, and it's going to get prettier by the day, and I really appreciate, again, all you've done for me in that regard, Robert.
No problem. And it will look much better as we're going. We're looking for a bunch of pictures and links and ways that people can follow the team and support the team through donations and buying gear and all sorts of stuff. So it will be a very cool site when it's up. So let's talk about the pups. You got two sets of pups on the ground right now. You've got the Bodie and Effie pups. So they're about probably a little bit over a month old now. Then you have Princess's pups, who are about 3 months old. So which ones do you want to talk about?
Bodie and Effie's are still, you know, in that stage where they're sort of waddling around, hanging out in their pen. The other pups are in the troublemaker stage, and that's the stage where they like to tear your shoelaces off, scratch you up, can't stop licking you. They're getting rid of that stinky puppy breath, though, which is nice, but I'm out here looking at them right now, and we got Stevie Ray and Dixie and Scarlett, and we got Joe and Merlin and Luther, and they're all classic. You know, they're John Baker's dog, Sport, is the father, and the mother is a dog from Joe Garney named Princess. So we got an Eskimo feel to them, really cool eyes. Made a big mistake, though, when we got back last week. We got all excited to see them, and they looked so beautiful, we decided to take them for a walk. And here in Tok, we have the main highway, but another mile north of Tok, there's actually a road that goes to Tanacross. It's just a dirt road, so we decided to go back there with them, and we took Walter along. And it was fun for a while, maybe the first 5 minutes when they hung out with us. And then all of a sudden, you could sort of feel this vibe coming over them. And I was telling Nicole, it's like the pack vibe. And that's why you have to be very careful when you take more than a few dogs on a walk, because they will sometimes, you know, if there's a smell or an animal, they'll take off on you and they'll forget, you know, that you're even around. And that's what happened, unfortunately. And they took off, and four of them came back, and two of them we found a couple hours later. And they were actually down a side road investigating a mother moose and her calf. So they came up to us whining away, you know, laughing, full of energy. But we, of course, were nervous wrecks. So I definitely advise anybody out there walking dogs or puppies to limit the numbers, maybe a couple pups, a couple dogs, and make sure you're in an area, you know, that they're comfortable with. And fortunately for us, I don't worry that much about predators in the woods, say wolves or stuff like that. I worry more when you're around traffic and a lot of you know, housing and stuff like that. So fortunately for us, we're in an area that was relatively quiet, and all worked out for the best. But it was definitely a learning experience, and that's definitely the last time we'll be picking them out in that fashion. What we're going to start doing is we actually got a cart with my buddy Tom, and we're going to start running six dog teams with the cart, and then just take a few pups with us that can run along loose behind us. And that's a much better way to do it, because it's as a human, unless you're a sprint musher, actually a person who can run real fast, good luck keeping up with these dogs, because you're better to be on a bicycle or to be on a four-wheeler or something like that. There's no way you're going to be able to walk along and keep up with them, that's for sure.
So these guys are about 3 months old, right? 3.5 months
old?
3 months,
yeah.
So what – describe your training philosophy with a group of pups. I know on your last show you said that these guys are going to be the future of your kennel. Of course, six dogs can really help out in the long run. What are you planning on doing with these guys? Maybe describe what the next you know, the next year or so is going to be like for a set of pups.
Oh, you know, nothing major until, say, they're 8 months of age, perhaps we'll start doing, you know, who knows, 20 milers with them at most, somewhere in there. A lot of it, that being said, it's all about repetition. It's about getting them out there, and it's about experience, and it's about showing them different parts of life, getting them in the dog box and traveling around with them. But realistically, you know, their bodies aren't fully developed until at least, what, 2.5 years of age, unless they're a special dog. I mean, I had a dog, a couple dogs in this year's Iditarod team that I knew were great dogs, and I was a little bit low on numbers, so that's why I put him in the team. But I also realized there's no way they're going to finish the race at a competitive level. In the past, a lot of big corporate mushers, they'll have two or three teams in the race, and they'll have their handlers or kids or whoever running the second team, and they're just out there training them, basically giving them lots of rest. And that's what, you know, younger dogs are like younger kids. They need that rest, where a younger dog being pushed at a competitive level, they're going to poop out a lot earlier. And I was just impressed that I had a dog like Bodie. You know, at the time he was barely 2 years old, and he made it all the way to Ruby, which was awesome. And then I had Mojito, another youngster that made it all the way to Nome. So there are those special dogs, but on average, these dogs need more time to develop, and that's why you really don't want to push them that much physically at a younger age. Mentally, though, you know, it's good to get them out there and give them different experiences. They'll be doing some longer runs in the spring. We'll take them on some overnighters, obviously, and stuff like that. But you can really do damage to a dog in the long run if you push them too hard at a young age, that's for sure. You have to let their bodies develop.
And how much of this is learning from the other dogs when they're out on these runs at 8 months or so? How much is human interaction and how much is dog interaction on the dog team in regards to their development?
Well, I'm always trying to, you know, when I do these school talks and I'm talking to the kids, I try to explain to them, and I don't know if people realize this, but especially in long distance, I don't know about sprints. Sprint's more of a genetically determined sport, but in long distance, these dogs are training each other for me. I'll put Walter next to Jewel or one of the smaller girl dogs, and he's going to train them how to go G or haw by simply pulling them that way. And or, you know, getting a dog team out of a checkpoint, you're going to have an older dog that's going to teach the younger dog next to him that, hey, it's time to get up off that straw, we got to get going down the trail. So a lot of what we're doing is just making sure that we have the right dog trying to teach the proper manners. You don't want to have two, you know, bull-headed young boys that are going to be beating up on each other at every resting area that you stop at. You're going to try to mix it up almost like musical chairs, and a lot of what we're doing is more psychological than physical. It's about just seeing who's getting along with who and who's enjoying what they're doing. If I've had some amazing, amazing dogs that are, you know, just, you know, Michael Jordan's out there, but they don't want to be out there. And if a dog doesn't have that desire to please, that desire to get to the next checkpoint, to, you know, chow down that food right away and learns how to rest properly, then they're not going to be a great long-distance dog. And that being said, a lot of your litters are different maturation ages, where some dogs might not develop, you know, mentally until they're maybe 3 or 4 years old. I bred up some dogs from my buddy Ken Anderson, he's also sponsored by Red Paw, and his dogs, you know, I was always wondering, you know, I know they're good dogs because I got a dog named Amos from him, and we bred him with Annie, and they're finally coming around, but they're 4 years old now. And a lot of it was just patience on my part and just saying, you know, I know they've got the talent in them. They've got good breeding and all that. And a lot of it just has to do with when they're ready. You just can't force, you know, the issue. If they're not ready at the compared to other dogs, then you're gonna take the dogs that are ready to get going down the trail. That's why we have more than 16 dogs in a kennel, because not all of them are going to be able to go at the same moment in their lives.
Right, exactly. So my last question to you, here we are in the throes of summer. From an Iditarod musher's perspective, what are you doing right now in terms of training for or planning on the next race in, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months down the road?
You know how I'm planning, man. I'm on a diet. I remember hanging out with Jeff King and Dallas Seavey right before they took the musher's picture at the Millennium for the Iditarod this year, and I'm sitting there talking to him, and I asked Dallas how much you weigh, and he goes 145, and then I looked at Jeff and he had a big smile and he goes, yeah, I'm 145. And then I'm looking at myself going, geez, I'm lucky if I'm 170 175. So part of the whole mushing game is taking care of yourself as well. So been out there walking a lot. I'm not much of a jogger, but, you know, just getting outdoors and taking the dogs out on walks every day, watching my meals, two meals a day in the summer. You don't really need all that extra food. I think it's almost like how Americans are trained to shop all the time. I'm not much of a shopper, and I'm learning not to force myself to eat when I don't need to eat. I eat when I need to eat, and I'm more concerned about, you know, drinking water and taking proper care of myself. And that more than anything, the dogs, it's fun to run dogs in the summer. I prefer to have them run around and play in pens, just because I'm always worried about porcupines and whatever else is out there in the woods. And I just don't know if it's necessarily proper. I don't really think dogs need to be run too much in the summer. So I think it's okay to run them every once in a while, but to do it on a daily basis, put it this way, when I used to do summer tours all the time, I didn't do very well in races. And ever since I stopped doing summer tourism, I've tended to have dogs that are have a little bit more resilience to them. And this might not, you know, maybe doing summer tours works for other mushers, running them every day. But for me, I prefer a different style.
So speaking of summer tours, when we were speaking, when I was up at your place, you were talking about doing some meet and greets with dogs there in Tok. Has there been any developments in that plan yet?
Oh, yeah. We've got the flyers that have been designed, and it's been interesting because I don't know if you probably heard on the news, but, you know, the highway's been washed out just on the other side of the border in Canada. So it's been a very volatile weather year so far, because there's been a lot of rain and they had huge snowpacks. So a lot of the roads have been washed out, actually. But, yeah, as far as tourism goes, I'm all over people meeting the dogs and, you know, petting them up and stuff like that. But I'm not going to be doing too many cart rides and stuff of that nature. That's just more one-on-one time with me and the dogs. And, you know, friends coming to visit, I might take them on a ride, but I'm not going to be doing that on a daily basis.
Well, you know, Tok is definitely a hub for tourism. I was there at Fast Eddie's there on the highway with my dog in the truck, and before I knew it, I was surrounded by a tour bus of tourists from everywhere, from Australia, New Zealand, everywhere else, wanting to find all about, you know, the Iditarod and mushing and all that. You know, it's just a fascinating thing to a lot of people, and I got my dog out of the car, and we stood there for a good half hour just talking to those folks. So people are just itching to learn about this sport, and I think that's great for it and how it can be promoted and advanced. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, just, you know, this radio station alone, what we're doing with our show here, it's amazing how many international listeners we get.
Right.
And it's Alaska. I mean, you go anywhere in Alaska and you're going to hear some German accents. You'll see some Japanese folks around. There's always some Australians and English and what have you. I mean, it's Alaska's, you know, I've always looked at it as one of the world's greatest treasures. And I think a lot of folks who live up here feel that way. And that's why we do our best to represent in a positive fashion, because we all realize how lucky we are to do what we do, whether it's a musher, a miner, or whatever you're doing up in Alaska. If you're up here and you love what you're doing, then you're a very lucky person. And I don't think most of us really necessarily are all enamored about, you know, how much money we're making off what we do. We're doing it because we realize that, you know, our riches and our wealth is found in how we live our lives and the adventures we see. And believe me, I used to caddy for some of the richest people in the world, and a lot of those folks weren't very happy at all. And that's what eye-opener to me as a young kid, it was that money isn't the whole key to success. It's knowing who you are and being true to what you're about and trying to make this world better in any way you can possibly do. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, slowly but surely.
I think you're doing a great job, and I believe your fans think that as well. You have a heck of a lot of support out there, so we're looking forward to hearing your adventures over the off season. We'll try our best to promote a show or two in the off season. I know that's travel for a lot of folks, so we'll do our best. Hugh, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon. Okay.
All right, Robert. You take care down there, and Can't wait to run some dogs with you next year.
There you go. We'll see you real soon. So on behalf of our host today, Hugh Neff, this is Robert Forto. Make sure you check out the brand new website, hughneff.com. Until then, we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.